Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour, broadcasted on Thursday. Here we are. It's exciting.
It is.
I'm thrilled. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. Please press 1 if you'd like to speak with us and join us on Facebook and on Twitter. You may send us a friend request, follow us. You won't see anything if you follow us, so it's better to send a friend request or like our pages. So those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. You know, it's so amazing, people that have connected with us from the radio, how many don't follow or like our page. It's really, really unfortunate. Really unfortunate. Well, karma for them.
That could be a privacy issue.
Well, you know, you don't have to display your likes, the pages that you like on Facebook. So you have the option to hide your likes. So liking someone's page is not necessarily a privacy issue.
So it could just be secluded to that page.
Correct. It could be just visible to the person who likes the page, him or herself. Him or herself.
Well, I don't know. No.
But we did. One of our callers last week sent us a friend request and did like our page, Alicia. So we appreciate that. You know, the other thing is, just want to say, the Voiceless Dogs of Nassau, Bahamas, probably we should do a fundraiser for that organization. We recently have donated twice, actually last week and this week, and there have been some dramatic events happening there. Again, the woman, Chella, that runs the organization, rescues dogs from the street. There's a terrible, terrible problem in the Bahamas, as well as many other islands. I personally went to Isla Mujeres many years ago and was absolutely appalled at the treatment of the animals there. Same situation, homeless dogs and cats. I mean, not cared for, following people who cared around. I mean, it was just very dramatic and impactful. And I thought, I'm never vacationing somewhere like this again, because it was so depressing. It was extremely depressing on many levels, because of the poverty there. But this woman recently rescued a dog who didn't make it. And when she was at the beach letting this dog see his last sunrise, her purse was stolen out of her car, and all her cash was taken. Luckily, she was able to recover her sentimental items, as well as her identity documents, her cards, which had already been canceled. However, this is a really great organization to donate to, and she needs funds right now because she's, you know, had money stolen and doesn't have access to credit cards, so it's going to be difficult for her to make payments for food, pay her workers, et cetera, et cetera. So we really do urge you to donate to this worthy organization. I'll post a link on our page, but we'll do a fundraiser soon when we're ready to donate more funds. Anyway, so that's that.
Yeah. There are so many organizations.
I know there are. Well, there's so many animals in need.
Yeah. I mean, you just don't know when to stop. We donate to approximately 10 donations for animals.
More than that.
Defenders of Wildlife, Wildlife Federation.
Wildlife SOS.
Society. There's so many.
Well, there's we donate to some environmental organizations too.
I mean, World Water.
World Health. No, we do not donate to World Health. WWF.
Bees,
I think we've
bears,
given WWF.
Wolves.
Yeah, the bees.
The butterflies. I mean, you know, and then what they do is
they send you so
different.
Much.
They send you every week. They send you something to donate because they're wanting you to be a consistent donator, you know, weekly, biweekly, monthly. And then they send along these pictures of their urgency and what's going on. I mean, it's
the problem
we do
is
give, we do give, and we give quite abundantly. So
the problem, though, is with those organizations that do so much marketing is that the money is going into the marketing and organizations like Wildlife SOS, Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which is one I think I'm going to be donating to soon because they help elephants. And the dogs, they're not doing marketing in the way that these other larger organizations are. So the money is really going more towards the care of the animals and the maintenance of the facilities that the animals live in and the workers,
right,
et cetera. So it's, you know, when people are sending you all kinds of crap in the mail, you have to wonder, where is the money going? I mean, it costs a lot to print flyers and send the postage that it takes to send these.
Well, you know, and we do give
cats,
so cat lovers out there, we do donate to humane societies for cats and people who protect cats and save cats. You know, I've started donating to animal organizations when I was about 15, and there was one called the Animal Protection Institute, called API, Animal Protection Institute, I believe. And a guy named Bilton Morris headed the department. Well, I gave to that diligently because I was always young. And
you were always young.
Always young. I mean, I was always making money when I was a kid. I was working odd jobs here and there.
Yeah, I know. I was the same way. I was like, I want to work. I wanted to work when I was young.
Yeah.
I was really motivated. Babysitting at 10, you know, wanted to
babysit
get 7.
I think I started working at 7, my dad's furniture store. But
anyway.
Well, that's not the point. The guy turned out to be corrupt, and he was, I think he was convicted or something because he mishandled the funds. So that was a great disillusionment. But What you have to consider is that even though some managements are really dark and ill operated, they still do good work. There's still work that's being done. So you can't always get a perfect score. So these organizations that get a 4 out of 5,
right,
because some of the money's channeled here and there. So I just think, so what? They're out there still doing work, and if they If 60% of their work goes to saving an animal, it's fine with me. And then we do our service for people on the radio. And, you know, even when I see a guy.
Sally Struthers.
Sally.
That's who that woman looked like yesterday. It just came to me.
Yeah, but we already mentioned her.
No, he's Susan Summers.
Oh, Sally Struthers.
Sally Struthers.
Yeah,
it just popped into my mind. No one knows what I'm talking about. Neil does. Anyway, Sally Struthers. That's who she reminded me of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sally, Sally Struthers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Okay.
Isn't
it weird how your brain works? You can't remember a name and then
yeah.
It just suddenly. It
not as a big mystery around Sally Struthers, but there's also a big mystery around Those Were the Days. What was the name of that show? One Day to... No, no. Archie Bunker show. I don't know.
Archie Bunker.
The Archie Bunker show. What was the name of that show?
All in the Family.
All in the Family. You know, and they started off with that old-fashioned song.
I love that.
The old-fashioned
songs.
Oh,
I love old-fashioned
songs,
of course.
But Archie Bunker was actually he played a lot of tough villains too. He was
in that movie. What movie? In the Heat of the Night.
No, he wasn't in me. That was Rod Steiger.
What movie am I thinking of then? What movie was he in?
Well, he was in, he played tough cops.
And he played a cop in a movie, so that's what I'm thinking
of. Yeah, he played tough, he would play tough cops and stuff like that.
What was his name?
God, you know, I'm having these brain leaks. I can't remember. Archie Bunker.
That's great. Okay. I'm looking him up. Carol O'Connor.
Carol O'Connor, yeah.
His name escaping me? Well, probably because I...
He was in
far too little.
Quite a few. He used to play.
Yes, he was in The Heat of the Night. He was. It was on TV.
In The Heat of the Night on TV. I'm thinking about the movie.
Well, you embarrassed me. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
He was. Well, I didn't watch The Heat of the Night either on TV, but I remembered him being on that show.
You know, funny story about Heat of the Night. I was about 16, 15. And I was with my grandmother, and I was trying to decide what movie she was going to treat me to, a movie in Hollywood. I couldn't decide if I was going to see Heat of the Night or Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, you're good. Well, we're talking about Bonnie and Clyde again.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And Bonnie and Clyde was getting more of the serious reviews. It was considered a serious film. And Heat of the Night was more of a popular review movie. I went to go see Heat of the Night. Ultimately, I saw both of them. Bonnie and Clyde, much better film by far. But in The Heat of the Night, still had a passionate, crowd-pleasing. I loved the film. It was a great film. I still think it was an A film. And Rod Steiger was always my favorite actor. People should catch him in a movie called The Pawnbroker. That's his favorite, his best role. And that didn't introduce Sidney Poitier. Lilies of the Field did. But... still, the movie won Best Picture over Bonnie and Clyde, which was considered raw and graphic in its day. And speaking of Bonnie and Clyde, that was the first film that I believe Gene Wilder ever appeared in. They picked him up and his bride up on a car chase, and he was in it for about 6 minutes. He annoyed them so much that they threw him out of the car. But That was then preceded by the movie The Producers, where he played the same kind of neurotic character, Gene Wilder, and ultimately, you know, Willy Wonka and all kinds of movies he was in. And actually, he did star specifically with a black actor, Richard Pryor.
And Blazing Saddles?
No. Pryor was in the... they were prisoners. They were people... I don't think Richard Pryor was in Blazing Saddles. Maybe. I don't think so.
Maybe I'm wrong.
It was another black actor.
Cleveland Little.
But Richard Pryor
and
Gene Wilder became a comedy team. And so, as you all know, this is the Psychic Hour.
I mean, what the hell are we talking about?
Movies on the Psychic Hour.
You're discussing movies.
Because you said Sally Struthers.
I know I said Sally Struthers, but that's, I'm right about
well,
that.
Well, yeah. You know, Sally's, well, the interesting thing about, I mean, she blew up. She really got fat.
This is terrible.
I'm sure
today's episode needs to be
but Rob
completely
erased. Rob Reiner blew up too. I mean, the whole crew blew up. It got weight, had weight. Can, you know, weight things going on. You know, Rob Reiner's father was Carl Reiner,
I'm trying to think of the charity.
Another great comedy actor who was much involved with Mel Brooks. But
who did Producers.
But was also
and Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
I have something. Christian Children's Fund, that's what it was. I couldn't remember. Find her yesterday when I was looking up. I was thinking it was Save the Children. Because I was saying, it's that one that's on, you know.
I sponsored a child at Christian Children's Fund for about 8 years. Maria. And then about the time she was
Was that the one in the
Philippines?
She was
around 12. Huh?
The one in the Philippines?
Yeah, she was in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Christian Children's Fund that sponsored a girl named Maria. We used to get her photographs and her artwork through the years. And then consequently,
in West Side Story.
Yeah, she was it later appeared in West Side Story, which we know took place in the Filipino jungles. And you know, the Jets and the Sharks. And there are a lot of sharks in the Philippines. But
Okay. I think we need to maybe stream into a relevant topic to our format, which is what are we talking about?
The journey of the energies between the chakras.
I thought we were talking about soulmates.
Oh, we're talking about the journey between the energies of the chakras regarding the soulmates that occupy those chakras.
I don't know. I don't care what we talk about. Talk just whatever.
Well, we could talk about James Brown and is that what you're talking about?
Huh?
James Brown and
James Brown.
You know, Soul Man. Who was the
Soulmates, not Soul Man.
Oh, Soul Mates. I thought you said Soul Man. James Brown. But who was the black activist?
No.
There was a black activist
I knew it wasn't. It's not James Brown.
Well, those are the Blues Brothers. I mean,
it's Sam and Dave.
Yeah, Sam and Dave, but.
And Isaac Hayes, interestingly, wrote that. You know Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, but James Brown was considered the king of soul.
I guess he probably covered it, but Sam and Dave were the originals.
Yeah, well, that's Soul Man. That's the song.
Right,
but
I'm
talking
right.
about the.
I understand what you're talking
about.
The
just... persona. The persona. And Clarence, what was that? I can't remember that black activist's name. Was he a Black Panther? I can't. Anyways, well, there's a movie out now about a famous Black Panther that was killed in Chicago. And I remember being in UCLA.
Did they have Black Panther? You know, it's really interesting. I didn't know they had Black Panthers in Chicago. Yeah. I mean, it's an urban area. Yeah, they have wild animals roaming around.
Oh, they do.
Wow.
They escape from the zoo and populated. I remember I was a student at UCLA, and I accidentally wandered into a classroom that was not supposed to be a classroom, but it was filled with Black Panthers. And so I wandered in like Jack Benny and was looking for my class, and I got the wrong room. And they closed the door behind me, and boy, did they work me over wandering in there. But luckily, I was able to amuse myself enough to get them to all laugh and consider me okay. I actually told them that I knew they were having a meeting there, and I came to support their cause. And they listened. I mean, they weren't akin to listening to a white guy, but luckily I knew enough to talk some sense of credibility to them, and I even mentioned that I saw in the heat of the night, and I felt that call me Mr. Tibbs. I said that was one of the greatest lines. Anyways, at that point they threw me out of the classroom, but they didn't harm me. But thank God for Sidney Poitier. In fact, you know, I mean, Sidney Poitier, and this was another movie. There was a theater called The Viola in Westchester. And Sidney Poitier starred in a movie called Lilies of the Field. And I rushed with my mother to go see that movie. And that movie had a song called Amen in it. Amen. And the nuns were all performing it with him. And, you know, heartwarming film, but you
that's
know, here's
Sidney Poitier. Christian. It's like a Pentecostal type song.
Yeah, you know, and then that.
I mean, I guess maybe it's...
From Canada, who he just died recently. The songwriter from Canada, that song, that Hallelujah, he sang. He did.
Do you
Hallelujah.
Mean he didn't recently die, Leonard Cohen?
Yeah, he died within the last 5 years.
Within the last 5 years, but it was like 2015, I think he died.
Yeah, but you know, Lilies of the Field, he's going to build a church. So we're getting to our
2016,
topic.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's about 5 years ago.
2016. And his daughter, interestingly, has a child, a daughter, with Rufus Wainwright, who is gay, and I don't know how they managed to produce the child. I don't know what the, if it was like artificial insemination, but anyway, they have a daughter
together.
I think
it was immaculate birth.
Immaculate conception is
I know.
Okay, it's the virgin. It's not the virgin birth. It's different. It's Mary being born without original sin. Everybody gets that confused. They think immaculate conception is Mary getting pregnant without sex, but it's not. It's immaculate conception is the theory, which I'm sure you don't support, that Mary was born without original sin, which is why she was able to give birth to Christ. Well, I mean, according to your theory about Jesus not letting Mary touch her, when he returned after being crucified. Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is, if she was truly born without original sin, he wouldn't have said that, because it was her karma. It's karma that he didn't want to connect with.
I don't believe she was born
without original sin. But anyway, that's what I'm saying. You don't believe it, and I'm illustrating why. But that's Catholic theology.
Yes, Catholic.
Okay.
Which is really weird, because Joseph, I mean, they weren't Catholics.
God, what did we watch
they
about
were Jews.
This? No, of course there were Jews. But
they were Jews. And Joseph later, descendants of Joseph was Joey Bishop, who was Jewish.
You know, we watched, what you fell asleep. You made us watch this. Well, it was interesting, actually. In fact, William Shatner was the host of it. And it was about Bible, revelation of the Bible, that, controversy in the Bible, and talking about the Apocrypha and about Mary actually not being a virgin, that theory, and why it possibly was created by theologians.
Well, it got all corrupted.
And anyway, it was interesting.
But there were, you know, the Pharisees.
The fact
and the
that
Jews.
Jesus was with Mary Magdalene, that they were married, and that rabbis had to have wives. So Jesus, as a rabbi, would have had to be married. I mean, it was, you know, interesting, of course, conflicted with my beliefs, or, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, it really stems down to what the essence of existence is all about. It's not about the framework of religion.
No, it's not about the framework of religion. But I mean, if Jesus was so holy that he was, you know, the Son of God, did he need a wife, really? You have to look at those. I mean, that's a human element. So, I mean, it's interesting.
Well, you know,
to consider.
So when we get in, and like we said, Christ did a lot of supernatural things while he was on the planet. He probably would have been on Blog Talk giving free readings,
or just filling the hour with movie conversation.
Except, you know,
maybe he would have hosted with Sally Struthers.
He would have. The only thing, being Jewish, he sort of said, "We got another caller. So what do you want?" But anyways. The process of the journey between the chakra systems is quite an amazing thing, because, you know, you have you have your chakra systems 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least in the immediate body. And we never really talk about the journey between the two. We talk about the separate essence of each chakra. But what is it to discuss the journey between chakra systems? How do we move through that process? It's like saying, well, you know, I'm 10, now I'm 11. Well, what happened while you were 10? You know, what's that process that leads us into each succeeding year that makes the energy of life progress in such a way that, in other words, what happens when the first chakra meets the second chakra?
Right. So the chakras, I mean, the journey between the chakras is not only about the journey between the chakras, but it's about the intermingling of the chakras. The chakras preceding the proceeding chakra. So the first going into the second going into the third, and what happens when there's intermingling, or when there's issues within the chakras, and they start there's that intermingling between chakras, and they start to affect one another.
I'll never forget when someone was asking me the essence of what is the journey between the first chakra and the second chakra. And
I don't want to even hear this.
Pee-pee. I said that was the essence of the energy. And the guy became a proctologist.
Do you really have to make a joke like a infantile joke on every show about bowels?
When we're talking on that level, it's not infantile.
Well, I mean, it really.
it's a biological function.
But maybe
get to that energy and we have to discuss that. We have to be plain and blunt about it.
Well,
we can't hide the fact that those things exist.
Be a more tactful way of discussing it. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, defecation and urination.
Okay.
Okay. Are you happy?
Well, and procreation, because it's not only urination that's connected
to
the second chakra.
Everybody urinates.
Or sexuality. Sexuality. It's not just peeing.
Sexuality is a given. We're born with
right, but our sexual organs are in the second chakra.
Now you're getting too graphic.
I'm sorry.
But
so it's not just about urination. It's about
defecation. But defecation comes before urination.
Oh,
at least in the chakra system.
Oh, I want to get off the planet.
But when we work from the ground up. When we work from the ground up, we're talking about the support system of the chakra system. The support system, first chakra system, is actual grounding. We are grounded. The first grounding we have might be conception. It might be birth. It might be our first primal scream. It might be the first time we're laid into a crib or on our mother's chest, whatever it may be. It's
suckling her
foundation.
Nipple. I mean, are we being graphic here?
Well, that now you're getting to the fourth chakra. You're skipping chakras.
Yeah, I know. And the fifth, because the suckling.
Yeah. But the idea
But you're the one who said the baby on the chest, though. So it was just.
I said chest. I'm being discreet.
Right, but I was just elaborating on your movement upward into the chakra system.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Well,
anyway.
The way we're moving upward in the fifth chakra you're talking to. Anyways, maybe I'm talking too much. But when we get into that journey of we always have a foundation, you see. We have a foundation with our first job. We have a foundation with our first love affair.
Our first home.
So we always have a foundation that grows into something in terms of how we create out of that foundation. So when you look at the separate attitude of how we constantly rebirth, we just don't rebirth in terms of our consciousness, or we just don't rebirth in terms of our karmic division between karma and transcendence. We're constantly rebirthing. Every day is a rebirth. But when we get more into the brackets of a generalization of what rebirth means, we rebirth, like I say, in our first job, and then we advance forward. We rebirth in our first year of school. We rebirth every time we graduate. So these rebirths that occur between, it rings the bell of the first and second chakra constantly.
Great.
Well, because if you're talking more esoteric terms, we're dealing with the foundation of any given topic, leading to a sort of creation out of that topic. I mean, just because you got hired, you haven't created anything yet. They talk about the first 100 days of the presidency.
Well, you may not create anything if you do get hired, depending on what your job is. I mean, it can be really.
Or you create. The essence of the division of ourselves from the Garden of Eden.
Right, but.
But the idea that we have, the word, it's weird because every chakra occupies the word work. It's in every chakra. You can bet your bottom dollar that every chakra is going to have the word work in it. We have to work in first, second, third, fourth. Think about it. It's the one consistent thing that we do. Even those who are unemployed are working. They're working every day. It's a life. It's a life energy that we do that. And if we're sedate, our bodies are still working within, internally, our minds. So when we have the transition between chakras, we have the process of how we work and how we think, and then ultimately how we produce, what we produce out of that work, whether it's something spectacular or it's just to put a piece of bread on the table.
Well, that was my point about the creation element. Of course, you're creating if you're working, but there's going to be levels of creation depending on what your station in life is, as far as work and what comes from that, creatively speaking.
Yeah.
If you're a janitor versus a doctor, there's a different classification of what's being created.
There is, and it's interesting the way we have our mindset. We tend to respect doctors more than janitors.
Well, it's terrible because janitors, I mean, look at the work that they're doing. We should respect janitors more.
And there is a science behind being a janitor. There is a certain science in terms of chemicals, how things are clean, process. I did janitorial work. I even had a small company for a while, a small two-person company for a while in Oregon, janitorial work. So and it was about the essence of clean. And I understood what it feels like to have a menial job, if you want to put it that way, a physically menial job, intellectually.
Well, yeah, and what comes
job.
What comes along with that, being in that position and kind of treatment one receives,
perception
of society, you know.
And I believe in the journey of life, we are meant to work. You know, we're just not meant to be pure white collar. We're meant to get our hands dirty. We're meant to work hard. We're meant to understand the essence of what all human beings do. I have degrees. So having said that, I remember working for this man who was very wealthy. He owned a dairy company. He was very wealthy. And but he didn't
a dairy
he never
company?
Really he owned a dairy company. But he didn't really
oh, the
work.
Dairy industry.
He didn't
horrible.
Really work the dairy. He inherited the dairy and he was really a white collar person. But
like he was a CEO of the dairy or a manager?
Well, his family owned the dairy. And then he ultimately inherited the dairy when his father passed. But also played. He was also never really had to work the dairy as a youngster. He just brought up on the income. And he But he didn't know anything about me. He hired me.
You mean my educational background?
He didn't know anything about my educational background. He just thought I was a sort of a manual laborer, which, good God, as far as manual labor goes, my talents are very small, but my efforts and my sweat were there. And I did what I had to do.
Okay,
but
so
he said to me, you know, you are different than me. I'm a higher person because I'm in a different class. And he went to school.
What an ass.
I didn't say anything to him. Well, my ego wasn't involved at the time. I was just more interested in his thinking.
I'm surprised you worked for a dairy, but that's a separate subject.
I didn't work. I worked at his house.
You worked at his house. Oh, okay.
I never worked at the dairy. I worked at his home.
Disgusting. Was he?
Oh yeah. No, I worked at his house. He had a huge house. And I worked.
At, you were doing your cleaning business.
Yeah, yeah. I worked at his house, but he'd have me do work around the house, and I don't know.
Okay.
For some reason, he didn't know why he was drawn to me. He didn't know why he was drawn to me, but he was. He met me actually at a golf course.
Was there a relationship?
Oh, yeah. We had a, you know, Holy cow, was there?
Holy being the operative
word. I fell in
love
with a cow named Betsy.
Okay, so.
So, where am I going?
Where are you going? I'm interested in the story because
I was a groundskeeper. I had to be a groundskeeper at a golf course in order to survive on the rugged Oregon coast and write novels and such things. But I had to work to make a paycheck. And I worked at a golf course on a motel and all this kind of stuff. Well, he met me at the golf course. He was very elitist, and it was a nice golf course. He met me there, and he hired me to work at his house.
So I'm just curious how that the subject of your class difference was broached by this person. I mean, how did that conversation ensue?
Because he just thought I was a manual.
But, I mean, why would it even come up? I mean, you know.
Because I said to him, you know, we were working. And he was kind of, he got to know me a little bit more, and he kind of said, you know, you're a manual laborer, but you're not that good at it.
Oh, God. So now you're lower class and bad at your job.
And it's amazing. Whenever somebody
category.
Sees me do manual labor, they end up laughing. Because I'm always doing something like Charlie Chaplin. You know, you hire Charlie Chaplin to cut your wood. I was always doing something odd. When he first saw me, he saw me, this story was told to me, he saw me from the window of the clubhouse. And he was looking from the window of the clubhouse to a distant hill that was in the golf course. And he saw me running. He said he saw this guy running across the horizon. And behind him, a tractor was chasing him. Well, what happened was I was working on a tractor, and I got out of it, and the tractor went into drive, or whatever you call it, and it started to chase me. So here he's looking from a distance and sees me running across the window frame, and then tractor chasing me. And that was when he decided, I don't know why, but he laughed. He said, I want to hire you. Anyways, he later said to me, he goes, you and I are different. He goes, you know, you're a manual laborer, but you're really not equipped to be one. And I didn't say anything because I don't know how you really survive because you're not really good at it. You're not just not that good at it. Some people are talented and you're not, but I'm going to keep hiring you because you work hard at it. You try hard and you're a good worker. But you're not talented at this. I didn't say anything. I just looked at him. But later I said, well, you know, it's because my hands are small. And I showed him my hands. And I go, I just don't have laborer hands. And he turned and looked at me and he said, hey, I've got small hands. And we put our hands together. That's when we fell in love.
That was the moment.
And at that point, back and he looked at me and he said, you know, something's odd about you. Something's, I can't quite figure it out. But he was making this distinction that I should have been, if I'm a laborer, then I should have been a laborer. But something in his mind, he was curious enough to observe me and consider that there was something wrong. He was always trying to figure me out. I wouldn't let him. I wouldn't give in to him. And I said, no, that's all I've been doing all my life. I just decided to play a game with him. But it was amazing to the extent that he looked at life as like a division. And yet when he became confused that it wasn't
his perceived divisions of how life works.
Yeah.
So he had a very linear perspective of life, and then you kind of broke that
because he couldn't quite figure out the division, and I didn't say anything to him, but he was trying to get me to make a transition to white collar thinking. So he was saying, you know, you're not really a laborer. Maybe I'm in your life to help you change your mind. I didn't say anything. I was about 25 25 at the time, 26. And he goes, maybe I'm here to help educate. Now, he didn't really have an, I mean, he didn't really have an education per se. I did, but he didn't really have a, he was privileged, but he didn't really have an education.
Well, did he go to college?
I don't think he,
probably
might
didn't,
have went to a year or something.
He probably did, well, didn't need to because of his.
Yeah, he didn't need
he
to.
Had,
he didn't need to. He just lived
business.
Off of the profit of the dairy. But he was trying to get me to make a transition to something. And when we talk about the transitions of life, that we make these transitions, you know, I think too of like Jack London, who was a laborer, a fisherman, a laborer, all his life. He only had an eighth grade education.
Well, he actually, he had an eighth grade education, but he did go to some college.
Later.
Later.
Much later.
Later.
But he made the transition of being, how does, you know, that brilliant mind, he was a socialist, but how does that brilliant mind.
He's also an alcoholic.
Yeah, he's had a hard life.
And
he didn't live that long.
But yeah, he was addicted to morphine 40. Too, I think.
But his the attitude of his mind in relation to him being a hardcore laborer, blue collar, was kind of amazing. And, you know, he's not the only example. Of course, there's examples left and right of people who were laborers and also writers, and not just in the white population, but Chicano and Black. And I mean, we have this idea that the transition between the coarseness of life and the more intellectual elitist kind of thinking, the brilliance of the mind, there can't be a division. There's got to be separate attitude, like white collar, blue collar, rich, middle class. We categorize ourselves in such a way that it even extends itself to the idea that the chakras are separate when they're not really separate. They blend together.
Just, can we get back to Jack London for just a second?
Yeah.
Because, you know, his birthday, it's obvious that he would have had a difficult karmic period. He was born January 12th. But his 1876, I mean, obviously he didn't probably transcend given the fact that he was an alcoholic at the time of his death. But I mean, he amassed quite a bit of wealth, obviously.
His house, Wolf House, was burned down. He had a lot of tragedy.
Yeah, he had a lot of tragedy. And didn't he have troubled marriages too? He divorced his first wife.
I think two marriages.
But, you know, someone like him, I mean, yes, he transitioned into this role of being a perfect writer and a brilliant writer, but that, was it a creative destiny or was it his destiny to come down and write? Probably the latter.
Oh, the latter.
Absolutely.
I mean, he wrote an autobiographical novel called Martin Eden, his world, his life.
So, I mean, talking about transition, when we talk about transition for someone who has a fixed set destiny is going to be easier, despite the trials and tribulations they may go through, than someone who has to transition because of creative destiny or not having a specific role that they're going to fit into in life. You know, having a difficult childhood and not having a destiny line can be challenging.
It can be, yes. You know,
to make a transition into something higher. Whereas he, on a destiny line, was able to transition into something higher because that's what he came down to do.
Right. When we get people like Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, people who have little education but had brilliant minds and were brilliant writers. I mean, when you look at the prolific nature output of what Charles Dickens did, more or less, Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, I mean, roughing it. I mean, his books are immensely dense.
Immense and dense.
Immensely dense.
Yeah, but I'm just making a rhyme.
Dense. And not to mention Charles Dickens' output of people like Emil Zola or Tolstoy, people who had a vast capacity to output, to put an output of intellectual content on the page.
Right. So the people that don't have that capacity and are struggling to transition to something higher, whether it's on an intellectual level or in a job or in a relationship, many of the callers on our show, they're struggling with transition.
Right.
And
it doesn't, you know, we'll get
the actualization of the chakra system, which is, you know, not.
It's interesting when you study the numerology of a human being's life, like you have somebody like David Foster Wallace, who did Infinite Jest.
I know, and then killed himself.
And that immense a book, over 900, over 1,000 pages. He also did other books too, but more well, he was working on a book when he committed suicide. And obviously he had some drug problems, but his major demise was depression. And finally took his life. He was also a teacher, and his life was somewhat, it wasn't that difficult. He went to academy. He played tennis for a while. And he was a pro, well, semi, not a pro, but he was
a talented tennis player.
A tennis player. And then he wrote this book. He wrote something about the broom, the name escapes me right now. And he wrote a couple of other books, but Infinite Jest was his name.
The Broom of the System.
Broom of the System.
But he was born 4/5/15.
Actually met him in person and had the privilege of talking with him. But here again, he couldn't make the transition. Here he was a teacher. He was now considered the 20th century writer. Wrote a book that rivaled Ulysses. He wasn't considered to be a big fan of Pynchon. His favorite writer was Don DeLillo, who wrote Underworld. And he had influences. And he was somewhat humble, a very humble person when he spoke. He was, you know, you could hear him thinking while he was talking. He was very cautious about his words. And he never hesitated to correct an interviewer. He would just often disagree and phrase things in a way that felt more comfortable to himself. But people tried to make him something bigger than what he was. He was somewhat humble. There was also a movie called End of the Tour that tried to capture some essence about him. But here was a guy that during transition of energy, having realized front forward that he had actualized his sixth energy, his mind, his fifth energy.
Well, and he had he was born 62.
Yeah, what was his?
I think he's a five, but hold on, 4 or 5. Well, he had a broken five and it's 2/2/1. He was born February 2nd, so it's February 21st, but he is that 22 going on 5, 15, 16, 17. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, yeah, 23, 5. So obviously, yeah. Literary energy, vocal energy.
Right.
But when did he was 46 when he died. So he would have been a year after his ninth cycle of five, his master number.
Yeah.
He died, yeah. It was actually within, he was born February, he died in September. So it was within 9 months of still of that 45. Is when he killed himself.
Yeah. See, he didn't really die. He killed himself. He stopped in the transition of life. So you really can't say he died. It's a different category of death. He committed his own death.
Did I say he died?
Yeah.
He died. But
correct. He died.
Right.
But he didn't really die.
No, obviously.
He stopped living. He deliberately stopped living. Apparently due to depression, severe depression. But at the same time, his students meant a lot to him, teaching meant a lot to him. He was considered a hands-on teacher. He was still working on the book.
Sexy. So, hands-on teacher.
Yeah, how do you equate that and determine that your life should end because of the attitude of depression? I mean, depression is a terrible, terrible condition to be in. And it's sometimes overwhelming. It doesn't matter what you're doing. But, you know, at one point you have to ask yourself, at what chakra did he stop? Did he stop? Was it the foundation of his energy that killed him? Or was it the expression of his energy that killed him? I'm always intrigued by the idea of when someone dies, what level are they on? What level of chakra energy have they completed, or they, or is it an incompletion, like in school? At what level does one leave the planet, at least in the physical body?
Yes.
And what have the transitions been like? His transitions, he was privileged. His parents were academics. And so where did this come from? This clouding of his psyche that became an overwhelming disease that ultimately prompted him to take his own life. Where does that energy come from?
Well, it's interesting.
When you're in a privileged sense of the word and you're not really doing, you know, you're not really dragging yourself through life trying to make a living and you're in despair. So you have, you know, this idea of how we make the process, how we travel through chakras until we suddenly halt and stop, whether it's by our own hands or not, I think is a worthy topic of discussion, because we are dealing with the chakra system, the process of life, how we transition, how we rebirth, and then ultimately how we conclude. But was there something else about him that...
Well, I'm just, you know, it's interesting as I'm scrolling through Wikipedia. We watched a movie about him, actually.
Yeah, Into the Tour.
That was excellent. That was an excellent film. Yeah, it really was. It really was.
Yeah, the guy
subtle.
Really captured him.
It was.
Well.
It was great. And he was a dog lover. It talks about him starting a shelter for dogs. So there are things that he did charitably. But he had problems in relationships, and obviously in the relationship.
Yeah, he had a wife.
I know, but he had a wife. But the person he was with, a writer prior, had there was it was an abusive relationship. He was abusive to her.
Yeah.
And he's got that. You know,
he's got a coldness. He had a certain cold aloofness, and obviously people who are depressed have a fence around them. It's hard to get into a depression. I've dealt with a lot of people who were depressed, and it's hard sometimes to get in there. I had one failure where one hung himself in his garage.
That was when you were working at the hospital.
Yeah, which I'll never forget. But you know, when it comes, and we've had suicides here on the radio show.
When someone might commit suicide listening to us today. We've had them right on the air.
Well, it's no listener today, obviously.
No, there are people. People are probably listening. It's just... You know, people sometimes don't want to call in. They listen.
Well, you
and
know,
we've only got 3 minutes left, so
3 minutes.
Don't.
Well,
don't anyone,
you know,
call
I
in
think.
Tie us
what
up
about,
at this
you
point.
You know, I mean, to create a life. Your life is still a creation. Any person out there, you're self creating your life every day. And I know sometimes it gets overwhelming, and you want creation to stop. But I think the essence of existence, I think, is very important. How we exist, how we connect to the world. I mean, today I saved a bee today. It was drowning, and I saved the bee today. Put him under a lamp and let him get his wings back and his breath back. Put him on a little thing outside. And to me, that was accomplishment.
I feel the best when I'm... When I'm, well, there's other things I feel good doing, but as far as being able to give to animals or, you know,
yeah.
I rescued two flies out of the pool the other day, two baby flies, you know.
Well,
so,
you know, I mean your life can mean something if because of the presence of who you are, there's always something you can help or you can enlighten, can make something feel good. You can actually save a life. What's that song, Save a Life? I can't forget the name of it, but
Save a Life.
Yeah, it's something about a save a life. But you know, and whether it's there was also this little shrimp type creature in the water today.
Why is that happening?
They were jumping around, those little shrimp.
I hate that.
Got them out.
Ugh.
And then I knew it would dry up and drown. It would dry up and die in the net. But I couldn't stand it. I put them on my finger and I put them back in the garden.
I know, it's like horrible. I mean, to see earthworms struggling and try to stay. But it is rewarding. That was the 90-second warning. But it is, I find a lot of reward in saving insects because it connects you to nature and.
Well, Jane Smiley did a wonderful editorial in the LA Times about how we need to save all life, including our insects, and grow flowers and appreciate all life. It was a beautiful editorial. And that was Jane Smiley, a very famous.
Yeah, supposed to have some flowers growing. What happened to those?
Well, they'll show up sometime.
Okay. Well, anything you want to say?
No, just appreciate the transitions. Experience life. Let the higher being take you.
Because in the transition, sometimes it can be uncomfortable and challenging. Transitions are not always easy.
You can do to make life worthwhile.
Okay. We're back on the air Wednesday and Friday next week, right?
Yeah.
Is that our schedule? Regular time. We'll speak with you then. Bye-bye.